Regular gum is boring, but Icebreakers ice cubes are different. They're fancy. Icebreakers gum has flavor crystals, which deliver a rush of cool, refreshing flavor. Plus, they are delightfully cube-shaped, making them soft and satisfying to chew. Icebreakers ice cubes gum. Ooh, fancy. Pick up your favorite flavor today.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is showtime. Please welcome the team of the Fulhamish podcast.
It's the Fulhamish podcast, your independent voice of Fulham FC. My name's George Cooper and welcome to the show. As the curtain falls on another incredible season at Craven Cottage, the result of the match felt secondary on Saturday. We applauded Marco's men as they completed their lap of honour, having exceeded all expectations this season. Our top half finish crystallised, most goals in any Premier League campaign, most wins, most away wins. Yesterday's Craven Cottage send-off showed just how proud the fanbase are of this very special team and left us wondering what is possible for next season. The match itself was an entertaining Desmond that left Roy's record intact for now. Mitro's goal tally replenished and a certain sideline striker in Hounslow wishing he'd backed both teams to score in both halves. Coming up on the podcast, we've got analysis of all the action, a look back at some of our highlights from Craven Cottage this season, and then we'll answer some of your questions to wrap things up. I have a stellar panel in front of me. Hello, Mr. Dan Cook. How are you doing?
Hello, Coops. I'm doing well, mate. How are you?
Yeah, I'm great. Just great day yesterday. I just did not care what the result was. It's just so quite a weird feeling going into a game. The sun was shining. I just want to see all gas, no breaks. Let's see some goals. Let's have a good time. AF, great to see you again, mate. It's been a while.
Thanks, mate. Yeah, glad to be on again.
And Don Betts, what's happening?
Not much, mate. Not much. Looking forward to the big end of the season for Old Trafford round two next weekend.
Here we go. Here we go. Let's kick things off with some three-word reviews. AF, I believe you've got them. Would you do the honors, please?
I do. So kicking off with can't afford a seat at FFC Riverside. Roy swaps ends. And I'm actually going to throw my own three-word review in there, which is lost the toss. And I knew from that point onwards, as soon as we lost the toss, that Roy is one of the only managers that just knows exactly how to shithouse Fulham. As soon as we lost that toss and we were swapping ends, I knew that this wasn't going to be a Fulham win. We've got Brian Lake with got out Roy'd. Luke Holloway with never beaten Roy. John Brooker with top 10 crystallised, which I thought was just perfect. And then Zachary Gobst. It feels bad saying this because, you know, it feels like I'm taking a piss out of my third granddad, but Roy knows comebacks.
Nice. Dan, just quickly, on the whole swapping after losing the toss, like it does just instantly get under everyone's skin. And do you think it's calculated? Does Roy do that all the time? Do we know? Is that something that a tactic that he will throw out? Or does he just know that it just rubs Fulham fans up the wrong way?
So no, it's just really annoying though. Because I guess for you in the Putney, it's a bit
for me, it's perfect.
It's a novel change. But like Dom, I'm sure you feel the same about it. But like for the final time kicking towards the Hammersmith end this season, happening in the first half was just a bit rubbish.
I just don't like it in general. Yeah. Of my team shooting towards wherever I am in the first half, whether I'm in the away end or the home end, it just pisses me off because one, it just looks shit on TV because you know you want the predominant home fans or away fans behind the goal. Or teams could score in like a last minute just for you know the limbs live on TV anyway. But then I don't know. It just feels wrong. Like, it just doesn't... There's something wrong about not shooting towards... I know there's obviously Fulham fans in the Putney end, but I mean, it just feels wrong not shooting towards Hammersmith end in the second half. And I can't remember really that many, like, big games or good games where we shot towards the Hammersmith end in the first half and it's actually worked for us. I know we're not the ones who are obviously going to make that decision, but every time, especially in the Premier League, I can't really see it going to work. So I have a feeling Hodgson knew what he was doing. But I'll probably get onto this later. I was kind of happy we didn't get the records point total yesterday because I didn't want to do it over Roy Hodgson. Mm. Like, I wouldn't mind getting a point yesterday, which pretty much consolidates top 10. And then if we nab something at United next week to get the records point total, that made me even happier.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's something quite nice and poetic if we'd have beaten Roy's record. I think he's an absolute gent and would have, you know, said words to that effect in the post-match interviews and congratulated everyone for a fantastic season. And yeah, I think it would have been quite nice to have broken the record yesterday. I was holding out for it because it's going to be a hell of a lot harder next time we're out. Dan, do you agree with me?
Yeah, I agree. And I had like, it was quite nice. It was, you know, such a like a jolly day, as you say, Coops. Like it was just like everyone was out having a good time. And then I was leaving the ground and I had this sudden like wave of like emotion that came over me. And I felt, you know, I shed a tear yesterday, Coops. I was just walking through Bishop's Park, watching everyone sort of walking over, you know, over across Putney Bridge. And you just like, it was such a lovely moment. Like this season has been so special. And, you know, maybe we won't have it quite as good next year, but to really just revel in it was lovely yesterday.
Yeah, it was a day that was full of like hope and optimism, like not just the weather, you know, summer's coming, everyone's relaxed, thinking, oh, we've got another season of Premier League football. AF had a bit of a kind of like testimonial feel to it a little bit. Did you feel that as well?
Yeah, it had every feel of a testimonial apart from Shane Duffy coming on, really. I think if we're going into the testimonial feel, it did at the start of the game because we're like, yeah, this is just great. I don't really mind what happens. And then it's just classic Fulham, innit? You go 2-1 up. And then the whole testimonial's ruined. We're like, we can do this. We can get the records points total. It's all going to happen. And then it went back into testimonial when Ward decides to ruin it on 83 minutes. But I think it was interesting. If it was going to be testimonial, Phil, like I would have liked to have seen maybe instead of Solomon, like someone like Cabano come on and let's get to say potentially, you know, I'm speculating here, we'll come on to it, but speculating that could be the last time we see him. And that was walking around the pitch rather than actually on the pitch. And no Shane Duffy coming on. I think he's not done it for the fans there, has he?
I wanted all gas, no breaks, really. And we kind of got it. You know, it was an entertaining game. You know, for the neutral, I imagine it was quite good. And I think everyone had a bit of a spring in their step, Dom, when we saw the team sheet and saw that a certain number nine was back in the fold. Surely the right decision for Marco there.
Yeah, I think in one of my Fulham WhatsApp group chats, I think it's the only poll that's only ever had everyone clicking the same answer.
100%.
Usually, it's like, oh, there's a few different options and people choosing different things, but everyone in our group chat just picked Mitrovic. And I think it made sense, you know, when he came on against Southampton last week, he's probably looked fitter than he ever has done since coming back from the World Cup with Serbia. I mean, you could argue in between January and, what, March, didn't look fit really at all. I mean, you know, I think the goal at Old Trafford in the Cup was actually what, his first game since that Leicester game in January. But, you know, that does mean technically he's got, what, 4 goals in 3 games now, if you include the Man United Cup game. But, yeah, and I think everyone wanted to see Mitrovic back, especially the last home game of the season. Although when I did see him stepping up for a penalty, I was like, is this him on penalties? But it's probably one of the best penalties he's actually taken for us. It wasn't quite in the top corner, but it was near enough there. And I think, he had to start yesterday. It's not like he didn't look match fit last week. Vinicius has done better than I think everyone expected during the time off. I don't actually think many of our results would have been much different if Mitrovic was fit. You could maybe look at the Villa game or the Liverpool game, but to be honest, I think the rest of the results are pretty much as expected. It's good to see him back for these last few games. Obviously, he's going to have a couple of games with Serbia in June. And then hopefully he's next season he's ready and roaring to go again and really sort of, because I think he's proved people wrong this season with, was it 14 goals in like 24 games or something. So next season I think it's just continuing that and really really showing what he can do. And if we make the right signings and continue to build a system around him again, there's no reason that won't happen. But yeah, I think there was no one who wasn't delighted seeing him back in the starting 11 after him coming off the bench last week.
Yeah, when he went up to take that penalty, his record was scored 3, missed 3. So literally 50-50 from the spot. It was great, but he hit it hard, which is all you kind of want from him, isn't it? But it wasn't quite 100% top corner. If he hadn't hit it quite so hard, I think it would have been a very, very soft penalty. But yeah,
He spent the last 6 weeks practicing penalties, which it genuinely looked as though he had done as well. The only interest I had from my side was I was like, oh, I thought he was going to miss it. But the goalkeeper still guessed the right way. And we've discussed this before that he must have some kind of easy kind of giveaway that shows exactly what side he's going to, because the goalkeeper still goes the right way again. But he's just for once hit it hard enough and high enough that the goalkeeper's not going to get to it. But it did look like he'd actually put some practice in. So I'm glad he put his band to good use.
Yeah, it's nice to see that spot has cleared up as well, it seems, following the interview with Sky Sports, which if you haven't seen, I feel kind of bad bringing it up, but it's just so funny. So before the game, Mitro did an interview with Sky Sports talking about the Manchester United meltdown and, you know, effectively, it was kind of like an apology. It's a very earnest, great interview in which he, you know, he says, you know, the fans deserve better. I'm working hard to try and repay them for their loyal support. But he had what can only be described as Mount Vesuvius in between his eyes. It was the biggest sit I've ever seen in my life. Either he has got the self-restraint of a 18th century Benedictine monk, or I don't know how he hasn't cracked that open. Also, like, I'm sorry, but someone from Sky Sports has got to give him a bit of concealer there. No? Do you think?
It's been done dirty.
Well, they tried to airbrush him. I don't think they made it look any better. It just made it look like he got a massive bruise on his in between his two eyebrows. Because when I first saw it, I thought it was like, I don't know, has he got like a massive piercing? Like one of those like massive bead piercings in between his two eyebrows, but no, it was just a massive fucking spot.
Yes, the comments section was amazing as well. People were saying like, "Oh, Mitro is such a fantastic striker, providing goals and assist," stuff like that. Anyway, we'll move on. I thought Crystal Palace, as you can expect from them and a Roy Hodgson team, looked very dangerous on the counter attack, and they really provided our defence with some problems. I thought Eze troubled throughout, and you just know that once they get you on that break, they're you know, they'll work with decisive speed. I mean, for the goal, AF, I mean, is there much that we can do about that? It seemed like a good finish. I wonder whether it was shooting the Putney end when the goal went in, I thought, oh, Ben Leno, has he just been beaten by his near post? But I mean, he hits it so hard. I just think it's a beautiful ball through for Eze, and Edouard just smashes it home.
I think potentially we can't do much about the finish at the end of it, but I think we can do a little bit about Eze running pretty much from his own half right the way through our right-hand side. It was interesting because Kenny Tesse had gone forward and Robinson was out of position, kind of trying to cover for him in the right-back position. He was not really covering either. I don't think you really can cover Eze. I think he's one of those players that he's wherever you try and defend, he's going to go round you at some point in time, so you might as well just let that happen. But I think that it was a bit reminiscent of some of the goals that we've conceded in the last couple of years, where we've just seen players just waltz through our midfield, and we haven't seen that so much with Paulinho involved. But this was just one of those where there just seemed to be a huge gap for him to run through. And after Edwards made the perfect run, really, he's picked him out. And then I don't think Leno can do anything about the finish. I was surprised at how well he's hit it. I was kind of expecting him to hit it low, and I think Leno was as well. But as soon as that's gone in, and I've watched it back, realistically, it's a good goal, and I think Crystal Palace will score plenty of those again next year if he manages to keep that front four together.
Yeah, I mean, Coops, on Palace, I think, you know, when we played them, what was it? It was Boxing Day, wasn't it? And you probably best describe them as pigeons as opposed to eagles in that game. Like they were dire. And then just Roy and his gang got back together, and they're just a completely different beast now. Like they are just such a better team. And I think one of the things that Roy probably deserves credit for, and we don't want this to be just a massive Roy loving, but he's actually allowed the creative players of Eze, Elise to thrive. And this is one of the things that Palace fans are saying, is that Vieira just never sort of unshackled Eze and never let him just go out and play. And Roy seems to have given him a free role, and he was so good yesterday. I thought he was exceptional, and we really
struggled.
Well,
I think there were sort of warning signs before the goal. There was that sort of chance where Diop kind of completely miscued clearing the ball, and everyone was like, what on earth is going on in the back line? But that again came from I don't know if it was direct from one of our corners, but it was definitely a counter-attack. And so there were warning signs. And then, yeah, it is a great finish from Edouard. I think AS right. I think Leno's expecting him to go low, maybe far post. And so he's trying to cover there. But as I said, Edouard just smacks it in near post up corner. And that was quite disappointing because I think we were the only team in that sort of first period of the game. We're looking like the team are going to score. But obviously, what would Palace do? As Dan said, what Hodgson has... I mean, Elise was doing it under Padre Vieira, but since Roy Hodgson's come in, Elise's got one of the most assists in the league. I think he's got double digits when it comes to assists in the Premier League. So I know, we did see that in different stages, but Eze is sort of given this free role, which is allowing him to drive through the teams, and we've seen that him damage other teams. The game that comes to mind really for me is that Leeds game at Elland Road. But yeah, I think I think, you know, it was disappointing just sort of because we haven't conceded many goals like that this season. But I think as we get onto the penalty, I think it was vital that we definitely got ourselves back into the game before the halftime whistle.
Yeah. I mean, what a great job Roy's done there. They were looking to be deep into that relegation scrap, but he's steered them to safety. And there's talk about him getting another year on his deal, which, like, I mean, be about 80 years old managing the Prem by the time he... I actually think that, like, Crystal Palace, there was my friend who's Crystal Palace fan was saying there were, like, jokes in the forum that they should offer Roy Hodgson a contract until death, until he goes, just like, so just continue to manage Crystal Palace until he just kills over on the sideline. I learned something quite fun. So, you know, Roy and Ray, they're like they're best mates outside of football. They supposedly they go on holiday together for like a little jolly down to like Alicante or somewhere. And they were on holiday when they got the phone up to see whether they wanted to go to Crystal Palace. But I just think that's such a lovely image of them sort of like both sat on a sun lounger having a tequila sunrise and then just getting a phone call through, like, oh, do you fancy it then, Ray? And then just going for it.
Do you fancy coming back for one more last chance? Yeah. I think, but you can imagine though, they'll both be sitting in an old people's home about 90 years old and just going, should we do it one more time?
Yeah, come on. We still got it. Just imagining like Roy sort of like rubbing Factor 50 into Ray's shoulders, sort of like. Anyway, let's come on to our penalty. It's a very clever ball through from Mitre to Harry Wilson, who takes it down. It's just a great, great bit of skill there to win the penalty. I think, you know, no question, obviously a pen. And yeah, that was about it, really. There's not really much more to say, is it?
Well, I mean, I saw some Palace fans moaning that it wasn't a penalty. I was like, in what world
no,
is it?
No, surely not.
Wilson, well, obviously Wilson cuts inside off Tyree Mitchell and Tyree Mitchell literally just pulls him down to the floor. I mean, I don't know if anybody really thought he went down easily or what, but yeah, I saw some Palace fans on social media sort of trying to make out it wasn't a penalty. But yeah, I think the touch from Wilson just completely... I mean, I thought Tyree Mitchell had an awful game yesterday, if I'm being perfectly honest, and I'm looking at him like, well, how did you get in an England squad? But no, yeah, it's a stonewall penalty, and it was the perfect time for us to make sure we got that goal before going into the halftime break. And yeah, even though, as we mentioned earlier, when Mitrovic did step up, I was like, I know he's on a very high confidence level after his goal last week, but it's still Mitrovic on penalties and Fulham on penalties. So I'm still not 100% confident he's going to bury it. But then he ended up putting it pretty much bang into the top corner. As I said earlier, one of his best penalties he's probably taken for the club.
Yeah, that bit of skill from Wilson, Dan, sort of Harry Wilson of old, really, wasn't it? It was like last season. He's winning a lot of free kicks, winning a lot of penalties with that sort of... He's looking really sharp at the minute.
Yeah, he looks good. He does look good. And I think you mentioned it. It's a lovely ball from Mitre, but I think it's so clever from Wilson just there. I think probably Mitre was expecting him to sort of chest that down going towards goal, sort of continuing going away from goal, and to sort of twist his body to chest it back inside is so smart. And it leads to, I think Mitchell slips sort of, and that's what causes the penalty, but it's because he's completely thrown by that little bit of genius from Harry Wilson. And it's really nice to see him back in form, because I was worried that we would just never see the Harry Wilson of last season. I've met, like, with the injury and something, it's just not coming back, but he seems to be fit and raring now. And I think next season we could see it. If we get a full season at Harry Wilson, I think that's huge, because there were times where we have missed him on that right-hand side of midfield.
Yeah, I mean, they've got a real winger conundrum at the moment, and I thought it was interesting that Solomon came on at the end, because as you sort of referred to earlier, AF, it would have been nice to have seen maybe a Cabana or someone, but I can't get my head around this strange situation that we've got ourselves in with Solomon. Like, he doesn't seem to be like any indication that we're going to be seeing him next year. I've not heard anything at all that like he's coming. Have you?
No, I haven't heard it necessarily. I said it on the last pod I was on that I'm not really sure what his motives are behind kind of his appearances at Fulham, because if he's absolutely, you know, hitting it 100% in training, and Marco probably starts him because we know that he probably on his day could be one of our best wingers. But since that's not happening, it makes me think that Marco's seen something or had some conversations with him that makes him think he's not going to be here next season. Now, if you think he's not going to be here next season, you don't bring him on. So I'm really in a 50-50 situation here. If when he comes on, he doesn't really look like the player he was for those five games where he was scoring every game. But since he does come on as well, I was looking, he did a bit more tracking back yesterday, but as soon as he got to the ball, it still feels to me like the first thing in his mind is, cool, let's get on the YouTube highlights reel. I might be doing too harsh for saying that, but it feels as though he's trying to look impressive rather than be impressive. I personally would have loved to see Cabano, but I'm massively biased in that respect. I think looking at the winger situation next season is such an interesting one with Willian, Cabano, Dan James, sort of, and Manor Solomon all not being in contract with us for next season, that we actually have to try and work out who we're going to keep or what we're going to do to replace them.
Yeah. Don, what do you reckon?
Yeah, I totally agree. I think the winger situation is really interesting because we've seen different combinations this season through injury and through suspensions or whatever. But I said, I think people would, you would settle on right now, but it's Harry Wilson and Willian as our strongest two wide men. Wilson, obviously, the one who you can probably only be certain is going to be here next year, I'd say, because although
I think Willian,
you'd imagine
Willian,
you know, I do agree. I do think Willian, because even when he played for Chelsea, he lived 2 minute walk from Craven Cottage. He lived on one of the alphabet routes when he played for Chelsea. Mm-hmm. So I think that's one of the big factors in getting him back. It was not just back to London, but back to the area he knows and he's comfortable in. It's where his family like. So I can't see any reason why Willian wouldn't renew. I mean, as someone said on Twitter, I think that video, a picture of him and Vinicius with Lucas Moura, becoming the Copacabana care home, I think someone called it. I mean, as then with Lucas Moura out of contract, if we ended up signing him, I wouldn't be surprised. It seems like a signing we'd make, and if we can do the same thing we've done with him as we've done with Willian, then great. But yeah, I think it is an interesting situation with Manor Solomon. It's an interesting one because obviously when he first sort of came back from his injury, he just kept scoring goals, the same goal apart from his one at Brighton, and he gave us one of our moments of the season with that. But since the Brighton game, I've not really seen anything from him, and it depends how much, like, I think at the time when he was scoring those goals, there would have been other teams, like other, you know, top six or teams on the continent in European competition next season looking at him. Now, because he's not really been starting, Are there going to be other teams looking at him? That's interesting. I mean, if it was between him and Cabano, and you could only choose one of them, I would probably just renew Cabano's, just because loyalty to Cabano and what he's given us. Unless there's, you know, big interest from a team where he wants to go to, maybe he wants to go back to France or whatever, and there's big interest there. But if there's no big interest in him, I'd like to see Cabano sit at the club. I think not just what he's shown on the pitch before he got his injury this season was great. And also I think what he adds to the dressing room, I don't know necessarily, I'm not saying Solomon has zero to the dressing room, but I think Nisus Cabano is clearly loved by nearly all his teammates. So I think you can't underestimate how big that could be. But in an ideal world, we could renew Willian, Cabano and Solomon, but I just don't see him doing that. I mean, I know with Dan James going, then maybe they will. But yeah, I think for me, the main one is just to make sure we tie down Willian for at least another season.
Yeah, interesting summer coming up, that's for sure. Let's just come on to Mitro's second goal. Speaking of Willian, what a ball in from the right-hand side in. How has nobody picked Mitro up?
So I looked at this, and I think it's great. I want to say Tosin and Palinha do exceptionally well at this corner. Sort of, obviously, what actually helps us in these sort of set piece scenarios is the size of our team. Like, we've got a lot of 6 foot plus players, so the centre backs and the defenders who are back are going to be looking at this, and then Mitro sort of just makes sort of ducks behind two taller players. I think it's Tosin and Pellini, it might be a deal, but he sort of just meanders over while they're sort of occupying the centre-halves, and he has an easy free header at the near post, and it's an emphatic header. But yeah, I think it's definitely something that Marcus Silva would have worked on in training in the weeks building up to this game.
I have a feeling that it's a deal. He just holds. He genuinely just stands there and holds two Palace players. I think it's Joachim Andersen and I don't know who the other Palace player is. He just roots them to the spot whilst Mitrovic just runs around the side. And just as you see the ball coming in, one of the Palace defenders points at Mitrovic and is like, make sure you track him. And then it's just Diop just stands in front of them and goes like, no, just you're going nowhere. And then it just means that Mitro's got a free run at it. And I also love the aggression that Mitro lobs his fat head at that ball. Like, he throws himself at it. It's like that, you know, that one when it's there's like a bloke on a night out who goes and like headbutts advertising hoarding, and everyone always brings it up for Harry Maguire from set pieces. That's what Mitro did. He is just
either
lobbed
that, or
himself
he was just trying to break the zit
it.
On his head. And he thought, if I hit this ball hard enough with my head, we are not going to be in the same situation seeing those YouTube comments. I also saw Kenny Tese had his arm around someone's head. It literally looked like the start of the season when everyone's like, oh, Fulham and their blocking tactics. Someone's going to work them out by the end of the season. Fast forward to the end of the season, where they're just doing the same blocking tactics, but better. And Mitch Rich is there, absolutely, as you say, walloping it into the net. I just, it's a sight to behold. I want to see more of that next season.
Can we just commission the statue now? I don't see why we're like waiting around. Like, it's gonna happen. Absolute fucking.
Nah, you can't get a statue until you've left the club, I'm afraid. I think it's just rules.
Killjoy.
On the other end, you know, denying us our win was Joel Ward, of all people, first goal in over 4 years. I mean, it was just one of those scrappy goal. I think it came off Robinson.
No, it's not one of those. So it's what on earth is Anthony Robinson doing?
It came off him. We didn't know much about it. He obviously played him onside, but you think he's to blame for this, Dom?
Yes, because I think it's shown. I don't know how many seasons I've got to say we need a new left back. How many seasons do I need to say this? I think Robinson has been better than I was expecting.
He was good yesterday, Dom. He was good yesterday.
Nah, it's his fault for the goal, though. So
I'm in Dom's camp on this one. Me and Dom had an argument about a year ago saying we didn't need this.
That's like saying old Trent's got two assists, but both goals are his fault. Your fullback.
Yeah, also, Joel Ward scored yesterday, but I also thought he was the worst player on the pitch. He just repeatedly got rinsed by Willian all game.
Yeah, no, he did. Yeah. I'm not saying he wasn't their worst player, but I think Robinson has to be doing better, either with his defensive line or making sure he clears the ball here. I just think you've got to be doing better. Like, it's Trent Alexander-Arnold-esque defending.
Yeah, I mean, I thought Robinson had a good game. I thought he's been fantastic all season, to be honest, Tom. I know you've got a bit of an agenda against him, but I thought he's been one of our standout players.
It's against him. I just think it's against Fulham left-backs in general. Like, I don't think I've been happy with our Fulham left back since Paul Konchesky. He left in 2010.
To be fair, getting ahead of the transfer chat, with Kieran Tierney going to Newcastle, Matty Target is available.
Yeah, the Newcastle fans don't rate him at all either.
I think if we've got Target and Robinson, I think that's a good pair.
I hope he goes there just for the fact I can't be seeing Dan Burn playing left back in Champions League. That can't be allowed to happen.
Well, I think that if you've got that as a combo, if you've got the option between Robinson and Target, that's very steady. Like, that's a really good set of options. Then I imagine we're exploring it, because Matty Target would have been a Tony Khan pick in that 2018 season. So I imagine we're already on that case, because I think it would be a smart signing. And I don't think Newcastle have much to stand on in the way of pressuring for a lot of money for him, because he's not been playing. They're signing another left back. They're just going to need to get rid of him somehow.
Yeah, interesting.
But also, we don't really necessarily have any sort of squad depth in that, because Gazawa will be going back to PSG. So it's definitely going to be a position where we only sign at least one player in anyway. I don't see any reason why. Matt Target's a perfectly good shout. I mean, I don't, like, obviously everyone was thinking about Grimaldo. I was like, mate, there's no chance Grimaldo was ever coming. I don't think to it. I think if we finished in a Conference League place, and I think potentially, which unfortunately was completely killed in the water yesterday with not picking up 3 points and Liverpool not being Aston Villa, which was devastating after Brentford actually doing us a favour against Tottenham in the early kickoff. But yeah, I think, yeah, left back's definitely so. I just think Robinson, I'm not saying he makes an absolute rick, but I still think he should be doing better in the situation that came from the second goal yesterday.
Yeah. Anyway, when the goal went in, I don't know about you, but I just couldn't care less. I was like, oh, it's gone in. Anyway, to the pub. It was a great day yesterday. It was good fun. And we'll come on to the send-off in the next section. But just quickly before we wrap up, Dom, are you happy to see Man City crowned champions again at the expense of Arsenal?
Yes. Like, you can't be from London and want Arsenal to win the league. There's something wrong with you. Did you either didn't know any Arsenal fans growing up or don't know any Arsenal fans now? I don't know any Man City fans. It doesn't bother me. Also, I'm not having this from Arsenal fans, but he didn't bottle the league. They got 9 points from possible 24. They dropped points Southampton at home, West Ham away after being 2-0 up, and Nottingham Forest away. Like, if Tottenham did this or Chelsea did this, they'll be calling it a bottle job. But yeah, no, I'm delighted Man City have won the league. It's just, I think what I'm going to enjoy most is if Chelsea have to give them a guard of honour. I think that'll be that. And then get spanked like 3-0. I think that'd be perfect. And if they do that result on Sunday afternoon, then that guarantees us 100% that top 10 finish and to finish above Chelsea. So wonderful to see. It's just a bit of a shame it hasn't gone to the last day, really, because, you know, it was looking like, you know, coming out of the March international break, that everything was going to go down to the wire. You had the title race going down to the wire. Arsenal were ahead at that point. You had the top four race. You had about 25 teams in the relegation race. But yeah, it's petered out slightly. But, you know, I'm delighted Man City win the title. Fully deserved. I mean, three in a row, 5 and 6 years. And that I think since the March international break, they've won every single league game. The only games they've drawn have been the away legs in the Champions League.
It's like the best thing to come out of this is, any of you follow the meme account Peep Show Footy Memes? And there's the scene in Peep Show where Mark Corrigan reluctantly throws a party, and as a quote where he goes, "I'm having a great time," and he goes, "Well, I'm not actually, but it's like I am." But it's just Arsenal like, "I'm having a great season." "Well, I'm not actually, but it's like I am." And it's just really, really cracked me up. Anyway, we'll leave it at that for now. Don't go anywhere, because in part two, we'll answer some of your questions.
Hello, it's Sammy here. Now, if you're looking for a VPN to watch football matches and TV shows which aren't available in your region, or maybe you're looking to save money by purchasing subscriptions from other countries at a cheaper price, then we've got an amazing deal with NordVPN, where you can get a massively discounted rate plus 4 free months by heading to nordvpn.com/fulhamish. Now, I genuinely use NordVPN loads. For instance, back in October, I was in America for the Aston Villa game, which was on Amazon Prime. Now, I have a subscription to Amazon Prime, but obviously I was in the States, so I simply logged on to NordVPN, switched my country back to the UK, and I was able to watch the lads leave Steven Gerrard's managerial career in tatters. A subscription to NordVPN is the price of a cup of coffee a month, and you can use one account on up to 6 devices. So grab your exclusive NordVPN deal by going to nordvpn.com/fulhamish to get a huge discount off your NordVPN plan, plus 4 additional months, all for free. Best of all, it's completely risk-free with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. You can find all the details at nordvpn.com/fulhamish. This is an advertisement for BetterHelp, a portal for finding online therapy. How's your social battery right now? If you feel a bit drained or lacking enthusiasm to meet all the social commitments in your life, then that can be a totally normal thing, especially with things picking up as we head out of winter. I know that pretty frequently a weekend just doing a few chores and watching the football was about the limit of my energy resources, but therapy can be a place to help you gain the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your batteries. Contrary to popular belief, therapy isn't just for those who have experienced major trauma. The overall goal is to empower you to be the best version of yourself. And if therapy is something you've considered, then why not give BetterHelp a try? BetterHelp is entirely online and designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. They'll match you with a UK mental health professional with a wide variety of expertise. There's no referral needed, and you can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge, giving you complete control over the whole experience. Fulhamish listeners get 10% off their first month at betterhelp.com/fulhamish. That's betterhelp.com/fulhamish.
Regular gum is boring, but Icebreakers ice cubes are different. They're fancy. Icebreakers gum has flavor crystals, which deliver a rush of cool, refreshing flavor. Plus, they are delightfully cube-shaped, making them soft and satisfying to chew. Icebreakers ice cubes gum. Ooh, fancy. Pick up your favorite flavor today.
Welcome back to the Fulhamish podcast. I'm Josh Cooper. I'm joined by Dan Cook, Don Betts, and AF. Got some of your questions now. We'll kick things off on a positive note from our very own George Rossiter. I'm going to throw this out to everyone, but I'll start with you, AF. What's everyone's favourite memory from games at Craven Cottage this season?
I'll probably go for me. Favourite memory. There's been a lot, and this sounds like a weird one to put in there, but it's got to be the last minute winner against Brentford. It was important to the end of our season, but it was also probably the only good moment that we saw from Kevin and Babu. So you have to cherish those moments. You have to hold them close because they don't last for very long.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think that's unusual call at all, AF. I think a lot of people would agree with you there. Dan, what do you reckon?
Yeah, I think that for me, that was mine. But I guess to throw something else in there, that first game of the season, Liverpool at home, the atmosphere was wonderful. And the fact that we came out of that game with so much credit straight away, and actually we looked at us on the pitch, it was the first time we saw Polina and everyone was like, holy shit, we've got a player. And also we just looked like a Premier League team and suddenly it felt different. And I think the optimism coming out of that game was, it sort of carried through the rest of the season. It was I think it was important to start the season like that. And I think it got brought up on Match of the Day last night. I think Jermaine Genus mentioned it, how he was there for that first game of the season and he was like, hang on, I think this Fulham team could be better than anyone's expecting. And so that was quite a special day, I think, to be back in the Prem and to feel like we're going to make a real good go of this, and we have. So that was a lovely day.
No, agreed. Dom?
Carlos Vinicius with his winner against Chelsea. It was so weird because I don't know if anyone else felt going into that Chelsea game. I was kind of expecting to win.
Yeah, I had a bet on Fulham to win that game. I just knew
even though it's obviously it's Chelsea, and as soon as João Felix got that red card, I was like, we're going to win this game. And it was quite, because, and then the fact it was Vinicius who, like, I don't know if he'd scored at that point yet, but the fact that that was his first goal was just absolutely delightful. Obviously, there was the Brentford one. I think the moment for Vinicius for me was better, but I think in regard to what the Brentford win did for the season, and we just kicked on from there and never really looked back, I think was big. As Dan mentioned, the Liverpool game, Mitrovic bullying Trent Alexander-Arnold and Van Dijk all game long. I think we started Liverpool's downfall is what's happened. We're the reason they're going to end up finishing fifth this season. And there's obviously other games you can mention. Even the Brighton game early on, I think that was on the August bank holiday, on the Monday or Tuesday night. And, you know, that was the first home win of the season, maybe. If not, it was one of the first ones. And yeah, I think, and so there's just so many different moments this season where, you know, it's just, there's been so many happy moments at Craven Cottage this season. And I think one thing when it comes to pundits, you know, with Marcus Silva being nominated for manager of the season, I've been saying it quite a lot. I think the reason why people are kind of saying O'Neill or Cooper, why are they not nominated? I think people forget about us actually being promoted this season sometimes. Because we've been in the top half near enough the whole season, pretty much. I think people have forgotten where actually we came from last season. And how a lot of pundits pre-season were saying, oh, Fulham will just go back down. Then nothing's really changed this season. But as I said, we've completely proven all the pundits who said that pre-season wrong. I think that's one thing that sort of we've actually got. Not pundits do as well, but we've actually got to realise sort of where we've come from and what's happened this season. I understand, you know, next season could be completely different. I think a lot of Fulham fans would probably would still take 15th place and staying up because, you know, that's that. Even though it's sort of five places lower than we did finish this season, it's still another season of Premier League football. But yeah, I think for me, probably the Vinicius goal just for beating Chelsea, it was just a shame. Another game where we got switched ends and the winner ended up coming at Putney end. But I'm sure that pleased you, George, seeing the Carlos Vinicius winner at your end. But yeah, I think just for beating Chelsea, I know it was our first home win over Brentford in donkeys, but for me, a win over Chelsea always mean the most.
Can I add one other, Coops?
Yeah, of course.
And it's a weird one, but I really enjoyed Forest at home for the pure reason that I turned up that day and I said to my dad before the game started, I said, if we really are serious about being a mid to top table Premier League side, matches at home against teams like Forest, we just turn up and we win 2-3-0 and it's not a game.
I think that and the Southampton game were big.
And it's just like, actually, you see the difference between us and the teams that are 8 to 10 places below us. And you're like, wow, we are actually this good. Like, we deserve to be here because we are just that much better than the teams below us.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think my moment, personally, I'm with Dom, the Vinicius winner against Chelsea. I felt like I'd waited all my life for that moment. Genuinely, like, and it was in front of the party end. Genuinely just overcome with emotion. I would have been like 7 or 8 when we beat them last time at Craven Cottage. I felt like it's just, it'd been like a thing that had been missing from my career supporting Fulham for so long, and just that, just relief. Oh, it was great. It was incredible. But yeah, I mean, as you just touching what you said, Dom, I think that people, yeah, they just forget that we're a newly promoted team. We're like part of the furniture, part of the mid-table furniture. People just like Villa or someone, they're just like, oh yeah, you know, Fulham are going to be good. They're going to be solid. And the speed in which we've made that transition is nothing short of a miracle, to be quite honest. But yeah, so we've got another question here from Rick Cardis. Where would, and we've kind of answered this a lot of times on the questions in one way or another, but we'll just touch on it very quickly. I'm going to throw this to you, AF. Where would we be without Mitro's moment of madness in Manchester? Would we have made the cup final? Would we be in Europe? What do you reckon? It's impossible to say, isn't it?
We can talk about where Fulham would be and where he would be as well, personally, because if he's the ninth top Premier League goal scorer at this point in time at 14, you know, if he has no suspension, he probably scores, I'm guessing, about five or six during that time, bringing him to around 20. You know, he would be the best of the rest in those strikers. So where he would be personally would be seriously different to where he is now. I don't think the results, though, during that time would have been drastically different. Dan touched on it earlier, but I really think that we probably have ended up in around the same places. I think Mitrovic can influence games for sure, but he can't absolutely win them on his own. It's not like you get a moment from absolutely nowhere with him. The whole team probably has to provide him with that chance to be able to do it. So I still think that when we weren't at it, Mitrovic wouldn't have been at it in some of those games, like against Villa. I don't think really Mitrovic would have changed that result fundamentally. So I personally don't think we would have been saying, oh, if we had Mitrovic in the team, we'd be looking at Europa Conference League or above that. I think it's more a case that Vinicius did incredibly well after he got going a little bit to replace him adequately. I think Mitrovic himself is the one that's probably missed out more rather than Fulham.
That's interesting take. League-wise, as we mentioned, I don't think league-wise he would have made much of a difference. But if he doesn't get that whole situation at Old Trafford doesn't transpire, or even if they do get the penalty and he doesn't get sent off, if we manage to, you know, if we manage to win that game, Lex, for example, and I think if he didn't get suspended, a good point to make is, obviously, I know he wasn't on a good run of form, but that was obviously his first goal in like 2 months. And I think he maybe would have kicked on from there. But I said Premier League results, I don't think would have changed. But I think if that whole situation didn't transpire, we might have actually got the result at Old Trafford and obviously got to the semi-final against Brighton. And who knows what would have happened there. Obviously, with our record against Brighton, you'd back us to hopefully beat him at Wembley. But I think the cup run might have been different. But as I said, I don't think the league form would have really changed too much. We might have got an extra point or two, but yeah, I don't think, I mean, we would, oh, it's, that's what's caused us to not push for Europe. I think there was a few results before that, and with the run of fixtures we had, you know, playing Liverpool, playing Man City, playing Aston Villa, all in that run. So yeah, for me, league form wouldn't have changed, but we might have actually made it to Wembley.
I think there's a couple of games that right at the very start, it's actually the first two after that, I think would have gone differently. Which is Bournemouth away, I think we would have made a better fist of that. But the big one, I think West Ham at home, That 1-0 loss, we were rubbish.
I just feel like we're always bad against West Ham.
We are. But I feel like the way that that game transpired, I think if we have Mitro in there, we get something out of that game. But ultimately, yeah, probably not looking at more than, what, 3 points, 4 points difference potentially. And so we're still out of it. And also, I think it's to be said, as fun as it would have been, it probably we could benefit from not having Europe next season, because we already have a job of fleshing out this squad and providing depth just to get through a 38 game Premier League season. And you know, we've scraped by, everyone knows we've not got enough depth, and actually to then have to strengthen as much as to add on European football to that, I think would have been a real struggle. And so I don't think it would have been a good thing for us. You see like what it does to West Ham, and they've pumped a lot more money in recent years than we have into their squad, and they've really struggled.
I still say
West
Ham season over ours, though. And I've been having this argument with different fans. I still take West Ham season over ours, because like if
it's hard to disagree.
Like I know we finished 10th and it's been amazing, but I've been looking where they've gone. And they have gone for some belters.
Larnaca looked incredible.
Iron Apra away for the knockout game. Then obviously they had to go to Ghent, which is all right. But then to have your semi-final in Amsterdam and a final in Prague, I mean,
it's just the Stag Do World Tour, isn't it?
Yeah. All Napa, you think it's missing is like
Napa, Prague, and Amsterdam.
Like Budapest is the only city missing. Yeah. And it would have completed the triumvirate. The season has been like Europe would have been great, and I said I would have always preferred Conference League over Europa League, because I think if you look at the teams West Ham have played in their Conference League run, you'd probably back us to beat near enough most of them. Obviously, I think they did get lucky with Villarreal and Lazio getting knocked out. But yeah, I said I still probably take West Ham season over. I know they've been flirting with relegation, but to have the run they've had in Europe, and we know what that's like, I don't think you'd swap 10th place now for what happened in 2010. So I know it's a different competition, but it still came through a 7th place finish. It's what theirs came through. But yeah, no, I think Europe next season, although it would have been great, we're only being our second season in the Premier League. So we can build on this and finish in the top 10 again if we're lucky, or even just sort of solidly mid-table. I think that's a good place to build on and a good sort of basis to sort of become what we were sort of in the mid-2000s, really.
Now, another question from James Barron. Listening/watching from Australia, it often seems that the Premier League media treat Fulham as an afterthought. Why? James, you're only just coming onto this realisation, are you, my friends? Yeah, it's always been the case. Understandably, we were last on Match of the Day yesterday. There's a lot more, there are bigger headlines that happened in yesterday's football. I don't think anyone's disputing that, but by and large, we do just slip under the radar, and we have done all season. I'm all for it, personally.
No. It doesn't bother me in the slightest, and I find it weird when people moan about it. Because we've been so solid all season, we're not going to be the storyline behind our win, if that makes sense. So if we beat, let's say, a Nottingham Forest or a Southampton, they're going to be looking at them going down as opposed to a mid-table team getting the 3 points. Yes, you can argue we don't really get the coverage, but then when we do get the coverage, people moan about the pundits not knowing what they're talking about or trying to sell our best players. So by going under the radar and not getting mentioned at all, I think that's the best way for it. Get your punditry on Fulhamish. You don't need it on Match of a Day.
I think when you watch, the only benefit we might get is that genuinely looking at some of the commentary abroad about Fulham is people are saying, what's a Fulham? Like, oh, well, Fulham are in the Premier League. Oh, I didn't even know, because they don't even mention us. Now, if you're a player looking at coming over to the Premier League, and some players might genuinely be like, what's Fulham? Like, I'm not going to go there. I'm not even going to consider that as an option from a transfer perspective. I think that's where it just plays out of our hands. But I agree with Dom that if we're consistently not first on Match of the Day, but regularly on there, everyone's saying how great João Paulinho is, how great Mitrovic is, all of these players, you probably get a few more clubs. Not that they just follow Match of the Day. I don't think they're all that lazy. I think Chelsea are. But I think if they're just going to watch this for their transfers, they might have been looking at a few more Fulham players from the season saying, you know what? Harrison Reed's been absolutely solid. I should absolutely take him at a top six
but
club.
I also think with us, I think, you know, some of the players we've had in our Premier League history, and I think our location helps. So we've taken the three promoted teams, Burnley, Sheffield United, then one of Luton or Coventry, then Bournemouth and Nottingham Forest staying up as well. Just if we're taking those sort of five teams. Like, the only team out of that I can see signing a player that if we were both in the market for that and they'd get him over us is maybe Nottingham Forest. But like, just with our location, I think we got such a better chance of signing better players. Like, let's say, like, I don't think Paulinho would have gone to Bournemouth, let's say. potentially for us just because of their history. But I think being in London and being where we are just helps us so much in the transfer market. But yeah, I think it's a good thing not to have a deep dive into why we're so good. Because, I mean, then you have players not just looking at... People will look at Mitrovic and Paulinho, but, you know, you have people looking at Pereira. You know, everyone talks about William, but that's only because of his time at Chelsea and Arsenal. There's only been some... You know, look at Reem, Tosin, Diop, Tete. No one's talking about Tete. Whereas if they actually watch Fulham week in, week out, they've realised he's one of our best players. Same with Leno. Like, I was having this argument in the office yesterday. If I'm ranking Ramsdale, Leno and Martinez, Ramsdale's not in the top two. Like, I think Leno and Martinez are both better goalkeepers than Ramsdale. Ramsdale's better with his feet. Yeah, well done. But, you know, you're a goalkeeper. You know, you've got to try and stop the ball getting in the back of your net. That's usually the first shout. And I'm happy that the calls from Spiegel's number one are finally petering out, considering his only game for England, we lost 4-0. So,
Yeah. Anyway, James, to answer your question, that's why Fulham don't get that much coverage on TV. Fulham Lilies asks, can you think of any other Fulham player who's reached cult status as quickly as João Paulinho? I would argue Mitrovic is the only one. Hangeland was very fast.
I'd say Hangeland, based upon the fact that he came in that January and everyone was at show, what, who? This massive tall guy. Saw him getting introduced, I think it was half time at a game against Villa. And he just came on, everyone was just thinking, maybe this might actually help our defence. And then by the end of that was what, 4 months in? He was already kind of reaching cult status for Fulham. You're right with Mitrovic. Other than that, you've got George Best, I guess. Like, he had a really quick introduction, but that's a long, long time ago. Other than that, you've not really got that many that have reached it that quickly. Moussa Dembele's first season for us, I don't know. People still had questions around, was he going to be that good?
Yeah, I don't think he really reached sort of cult status until he got moved into that deeper midfield role. Because exactly. When they first signed him, he was still playing sort of number 10, wing. Second striker, yeah, out wide. So, yeah, I think you look at Paulinho, you can obviously mention Mitrovic, because once he scored against Bristol City, it was just non-stop goals from there. But yeah, in recent times, definitely. I mean, I think one player for me, but it sort of went sour later, was Jimmy Bullard when he sort of first came in, scored that free kicker at home to Sheffield United, then obviously picked up that injury at Newcastle, and then it sort of went downhill from there, and obviously he moved to Hull, which sort of was ruined his career, basically. But yeah, I think in recent times, I think Mitrovic is the only one you can really point to. Hangeland, yeah, but I don't think he reached cult status as soon as João Paulinho did in his first sort of few months. I think Hangeland really reached cult status probably in the following season, although he was one of our best players in that second 6 months. But yeah, I think, yeah, Mitrovic is anyone, like AF said, that comes to my mind.
Potential one that was first season was exceptional and received so many plaudits, and then second season was wank. Sacha Rita, his first season, I thought he received a lot of love and he was very good at right back, and then second season everyone was awful, but he was in like team of the season shouts that year from memory, so I think he deserves a nod. But I think the way that second season went, I think his myth and legend has just dissipated because he didn't do anything after that.
I think Mitro is probably the closest one. On this note, talking about our beloved João, John Harkinsale asks, considering Paulinho's gesture at the end of the game, is it a done deal that he's leaving? I don't know. I think he's a sort of, personally, the way he was tapping the badge, and I think he's just quite a, he's very appreciative of the love that the fans give him. And I think I'm praying that it was just him thanking the fans for how much love that they've given him throughout the course of the season. But it was a prolonged sort of clap, and it's
twice.
I mean, what do you lads reckon?
I think everyone's going way too Cluedo on everything that João Paulinho posts or does. Like, maybe that's just his way of saying thanks for the great season. I'll see you in August. I think if anyone does go this summer, it is most likely going to be him. But I think what we've achieved with him this season, there's no reason. Like, the only way he's going is if a Champions League club comes in. I don't think he goes to Liverpool, personally. Like, I think if Liverpool qualify for the Champions League, I think he does. I think, you know, he needs to be guaranteed that he's going to be playing football, because especially with the Euros coming up at the end of next season. And he's just, weirdly enough, William Carvalho was starting over him in the World Cup. But I think he's definitely going to be looking to be a starting midfielder of Portugal in Euro 2024, obviously, if they assume they'll qualify. So I think I can only see him going to a Champions League team. To be honest, I can actually see him going abroad as opposed to a team in the Premier League. I think if he went to, let's say, a Bayern Munich, for example, I don't think too many Fulham fans would begrudge him. But if he ended up going to like a Tottenham or a Liverpool, then I think a lot of Fulham fans would be like, oh, okay.
Tottenham would really be horrible. If he went to Tottenham, to be honest,
Spurs need another holding midfielder? They can fuck off. Like, they've only got holding midfielders.
What Spurs need is James Maddison or something like that. But I don't want to get on Spurs, because I think I could do a 3-hour podcast about what's wrong with that football club. I think João Paulinho will stay. I think he's got at least one more. I think he's got one more season with us. If we finish 10th again, but if he can help us push for Europe again next season, then I think he'll be great to keep him staying. And if he doesn't, then I'll wish him happily to go next season. I mean, remember, he signed a long-term deal last summer. He's not going to be going for a small amount of money. I think I can't see him going for anything less than 50. I think 50 is probably the bare minimum that a club would sell him for. So I think, yeah, clubs may come in for him, but I think he knows how much he's loved by the fans. I think he's shown he's appreciated that. Especially, I mean, if you want any example, I mean, getting your fifth yellow card by jumping in the crowd after scoring like the 65th minute or whatever it was. And I think he did very well to get his fifth suspension before the September international break. I think that's got to be applauded. I don't see him going. I think he's going to stay for at least one more season.
Yeah, we're in a very strong position no matter what happens. Obviously, we all hope that he stays. He's so important to our team that it's going to be big, big, big money if it does happen, which we can reinvest.
When was the last time we had that? Like, when was the last time we had a player that was a genuine asset that we were going to get full value for? Because it feels like whenever we've got an asset, they always seem to get snapped up in the last year, either the last year of the contract or the younger players at the end of their contract. Whereas actually, we're sat here now with a Premier League footballer. So we've stayed up. He's got 5 years left in his contract and he's absolute gravy. Like, it's been a long time, I think, since we've had a player of like full value.
I'd argue Moussa Dembélé, but yeah, at the same time, when he left it, if that's full value and it's 15 million quid, like, that's not his full value. I think they got an absolute steal in that deal. I know it was way before the inflation rates did what they'd done. But at the same time, like, I actually don't think that Fulham signed that many players that are in their prime. We actually have quite a good track record at signing players that are maybe a little bit past it, but we can turn them into good players, or they've just not succeeded somewhere else. So I think it's exciting to have João Paulinho. That's why we're all so nervous about it, because we're in uncharted territory. We've not really seen Fulham have a player that everybody is after who realistically might actually be in excess of £50 million. We're not thinking about the money though, but we're actually genuinely thinking like, let's try and keep this player in his prime and we can attract more players like him.
Yeah. Yeah, so, I mean, it's a strong position to be in, no matter which way you look at it. And yeah, pray that he stays. On this note, Vincent asks, which players do we think we said goodbye to yesterday? He says he feels Rodak and Cambano are going. James likely won't return, I imagine. Any others we think we won't see at the Cottage in a Fulham shirt? It's quite a sad note to end on, but anyone else who Vincent mentioned?
I can't bear the thought of Niskins not getting a new. There's no risk in it unless it's him who wants to leave and play more regular football. Like, just give him sign him as the club gardener, do something, but just like keep him here because we love him. The players love him. The coaches love him. Like, Marco Silva really seems to, like, just as a person and a footballer, really warm to Niskins. So I'd love to see him stay. I think we've touched on the winger situation. I think Manuel Solomon, I think I can't see him in a Fulham shirt next year. Dan James, we probably won't see back. I don't know what else you guys think.
Thanks, Everton away, and enjoy your time back at Leeds.
Yeah.
We can definitely end the podcast on a positive note. Depending on which side of the roof you're from. Shane Duffy's not going to be here next season.
Levin Kurzawa either. Who
didn't we end up signing Duffy on a permanent deal in the January?
Six months.
Was
that for a whole year though?
6 months.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Well, I'm with AF. I hope I never see that man in a Fulham shirt again. So he can do whatever he wants as long as it's not related to Fulham Football Club, and I'm happy to never see Shane Duffy ever again in my lifetime.
I don't feel that strongly about Shane Duffy.
I brought this up. I feel like I've unearthed Don Betts' secret hate.
I hate Shane Duffy more than Anthony Robinson. He's so bad at football.
He's not bad at football. He's there for the vibes and the vibes only.
We would all every club just needs just a vibes like Dan man. James. Just like Dan James.
Yeah, we've got vibes, but it just doesn't need to be Shane Duffy.
We can thank Shane Duffy for playing up top.
Anyway, on that note, let's wrap up this podcast. Sammy will be back with the Thursday Club on Thursday. But before we go, AF, would you like to name the podcast, please? What was your favourite three-word review?
Just because, again, I can't piss off my third granddad that much. I'm going to go with Top 10 Crystallised from John Brooker.
Nice. Excellent. That would be it for today's podcast. Thank you very much for listening. And thank you, Dan Cook, for joining me.
I love that, Coops. Thank you very much.
AF, pleasure as always.
Thanks, mate.
And cheers, Don Betts.
No worries, mate.
We'll see you on Thursday. You white.
You white.